You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Okay, quick programming note before I get to the top of this week's show. I had to record this before the Senate voted on Brett Kavanaugh over the weekend. I'm going to assume, as looks highly likely right now, fuck you, Jeff Flake, that Kavanaugh got confirmed. All right, here we go, opening this week's show. So this confidential note appeared at the end of last week's Savage Love, which went up on Tuesday night. Confidential to American citizens everywhere. Furious about Brett Kavanaugh? Me too. That's why I donated to the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. Our only hope of protecting a woman's right to choose, voting rights, LGBTQ rights, the environment, organized labor, our only hope for blocking Trump's anti-everyone and everything agenda is to take back the House and Senate this November. If Democrats control the House come January, which looks likely, they can impeach Kavanaugh. If they control the Senate come January, a longer shot but within reach, they can put Kavanaugh on trial. And that means a full and for real investigation into all the allegations against him, including the numerous ways in which he perjured himself during his confirmation hearings. All right, that was at the end of last week's Savage Love, Tuesday night. Wednesday morning, this news broke. Quote, as of this writing, 538 Senate forecast gives Democrats a 28% chance of retaking the upper chamber this November. This week, the billionaire and potential 2020 candidate pledged $20 million to the Senate Democrats' super PAC. New York Magazine's Eric Levitz credits Bloomberg's disgust with the GOP's handling of the Ford Kavanaugh hearings, but that hearing took place the previous week. It seems like decades ago now, and Bloomberg didn't get around to making this donation until after my column went live. So it seems obvious, doesn't it? Michael Bloomberg is a Savage Love reader, and if his $20 million donation helps the Democrats take the Senate, that was all me, baby. All me, I built that. Now, Savage Love truthers will argue that Bloomberg could have made that donation immediately after the hearings and we didn't find out about it until after my column came out. I reject this hypothesis. The facts here are clear. Michael Bloomberg, billionaire, former mayor of New York City, is a Savage Love reader. And when I say jump slash donate, Michael Bloomberg says how high slash how much. Be like Mike and do what I'm telling you to do. Get out your credit card and make a donation to the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, dscc.org. Click on contribute. Because if we want to have an actual investigation into the allegations against Kavanaugh, we need to take back the House and the Senate. If we want to get to the bottom of Russia's attack on our democracy, we need to take back the House and the Senate. If we want to protect a woman's right to control her own reproductive system, if we don't want to see women and doctors going to jail, if we don't want to see women dying needlessly, we need to take back the House and the Senate. If we want to protect voting rights, protect immigrants, reform our criminal justice system, and on, we need to take back the House and the Senate. 28% odds, 538 says? Those are better odds than 538 gave Donald Trump for winning the White House. We can do this. But the election is 28 days away, and we can't do it if we just sit there. We got to do something. We cannot take the hyped blue wave for granted because, as The Week reports, Republicans have caught up with Democrats and voter enthusiasm amid the Kavanaugh saga. Here's a quote from The Week's report. With the 2018 midterms less than 4 weeks away, a new NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll shows Republican voters have caught up with Democrats in viewing the election as very important. The same poll registered a 10-point enthusiasm gap in July, but now Democrats and Republicans are both nearly equally juiced to vote, says The Week. Democrats now lead by a 2-point margin, 82% to 80%. The pollsters cite the contentious Senate hearings over Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court nomination and the sexual allegations against him. The result of hearings, at least in the short run, is the Republican base was awakened, says Lee Meringhoff, Marist's polling director. It's like a giant batshit signal went up. A terrible man who is alleged to have done terrible things and who actually did live on television disqualifying things, lying under oath during his confirmation hearing. Oh my God, that terrible man is in trouble. And it's not Kavanaugh's lying or Kavanaugh's raw partisanship that awakened the GOP base. No. It is the sexual assault. This is the same party that spent the last 10 years insisting it had to protect women from the non-existent threat posed by trans women using public restrooms. And here they are, now all excited to vote for an actual threat to women's safety. Now, this wouldn't be the first time an accused sexual predator got Republicans excited about voting. They were psyched to vote for an admitted sexual predator in 2016, Donald J. Trump. And not just Republican men, either. Remember those Trump can grab my pussy t-shirts the double X deplorables were wearing at Trump rallies in the fall of 2016? I do. But the accused sexual predator that excites Republicans to vote doesn't always win. Georgia Republicans were excited to vote for Roy Moore, accused child sexual predator, in 2017, and Moore lost that race. So we can beat them, and we can take the Senate, but we got to do the work. We got to register, we got to donate, we got to volunteer, and we got to vote. November 6th, that's Election Day. It's exactly 1 month away from today. Vote, donate, volunteer. Let's do this. So coming up on today's show, Lo from the Dream a Little podcast joins us to discuss ABDL, Adult Baby Diaper Lovers and Littles. That's on the micro free edition of the Savage Lovecast. And on the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, lots more questions, lots more answers. You can subscribe to the Magnum edition, which is twice as long and has no ads, at savagelovecast.com. All of that and more coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Robinhood, an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. Get a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at savage.robinhood.com. That's savage.robinhood.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Stamps.com. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. And right now you can enjoy the Stamps service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in my code, SAVAGE. That's Stamps.com, click the mic. Enter Savage. Know any assholes out there in need of a good ass kissing or maybe a good ass licking? Give them the gift of the Tushy bidet. Tushy is the modern bidet that cleans your butt way better than toilet paper. Tushy is easy to install on most standard toilets. It only takes about 10 minutes to do so. Tushy starts at just $69, but use the promo code SAVAGE for 10% off your Tushy bidet today. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy.
Hey, Dan. So I'm a heterosexual male in my early 20s, and I've been having a constant problem with relationships I've been having. So I'll meet a girl and then develop a somewhat deep connection because of all the things we share with each other in our first time meeting each other. And then after I actually get to know them, I'll realize I don't really like their personality traits and am not as interested in them as I thought I was. But at this point, they're invested in me, so I feel bad about ending the relationship. And I guess I'll just continue it for the sake of not wanting to, I guess, hurt their feelings. So I was wondering what I can do before going into these, I guess, encounters with women without being an asshole in a way or losing who I am as a person.
You've noticed this pattern, and part of this pattern is hurting the feelings of these women that you are briefly dating into, allowing them to make these emotional, sometimes I assume sexual investments in you that aren't wise investments now that you know this about yourself. So going forward, if you want to avoid hurting people, tell the truth. Be honest. Use your words. When you meet someone and there's a spark and a mutual interest, tell them. Say that you're only interested in casual dating right now. You're not looking for any long-term commitment. You're not looking for a serious romantic entanglement. You're also not looking for monogamy. And then if the woman that you've just said that to is looking for something more serious, she'll know not to invest in you. She'll know not to look to you for that kind of relationship that you would like to have. You will weed out the women who want something more serious from the women who might be up for what it sounds like you're up for right now, in your early 20s, which is not an inappropriate thing to be up for in your early 20s, which is a series of casual relationships where you learn more about yourself, brief commitments even, serial monogamy, where you learn about yourself, you learn about them, you learn what you want, and eventually, perhaps later in your 20s or into your 30s, you'll know yourself and know what you want by dint of and because you've benefited from these early experimental, non-committed relationships. Brief, short-term, successful relationships. You're having a lot of unsuccessful short-term relationships right now because you're allowing these women to assume something that isn't irrational. It's a reasonable assumption that if you, this guy, this sexy guy, expresses interest in them in this way, that he is open to a commitment and a romantic relationship. Because you're allowing them to make this reasonable assumption, they're getting hurt. And so your short-term relationships at this stage of your life are not successful. Don't allow them to make that reasonable assumption by being upfront and truthful about what you're looking for and the kind of relationship you're capable of having right now, which is short-term, not committed.
Hi, Dan. I am a 30-year-old straight female on the East Coast. I have a question about how to talk to my 13-year-old cousin. I have a feeling that she may be transgender. She is not acknowledging that she's going through puberty for at least over a year now, probably a little bit longer, probably closer to 2 years. And she's become obsessive about studying for school. Where she is, there are tests to go into specialized high schools. And she's become obsessive about studying for that so she can go into a specialized high school. She's the child of two first-generation Asians. There is some pressure traditionally of, you know, to do well in school. But my aunt and uncle are at the point where they think that she's studying too much. She and I aren't super close because there is such a big age difference. She was born when I was a senior in high school. But I just wanted to know if you had any suggestions on any books that I should be reading, or how to say to her, I'm on your side no matter what. I don't want to feed into her and tell her she's transgender because she may not be. But I just want her to know that she has an ally and she has support no matter what within her family. And I'm not sure how to do that.
Looking right at a kid that you think might be queer, some 12, 13, 14-year-old kid, is a little bit like looking at the sun during an eclipse, except instead of damaging yourself, instead of hurting yourself, you're likely to hurt that kid. Looking at that 12-year-old kid, that 13-year-old kid, and saying, you're gay, right? Or saying, I think you might be gay. If you're gay, or if you're trans, or if you're bi, or if you're a lesbian, just know that I'm your ally, I support you, and you can turn to me. That could traumatize that kid. There are gender nonconforming 12, 13, 14-year-old kids who are not queer, who may be being bullied for the way they're perceived to be queer. And you bursting into their bedroom at Thanksgiving to let them know that you're their ally in their queerness could just feel like more bullying. And even if they are queer, a lot of 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds aren't ready to come out yet and will deny it. If a loving relative, when I was a screaming musical theater queen at age 13, when my parents asked me what I wanted for my birthday and I said tickets to A Chorus Line, if a loving, supportive ally relative had come into my room or pulled me aside to let me know that when I was ready to come out as gay, they were on my side, I would have had a heart attack. I would have denied I was gay. I would have doubled and tripled down on the lie that I wasn't gay. And it would have possibly set me back. What helps, what you can do for the 12, 13, 14-year-old queer kids in your life, for the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old queer kids in your life is say queer positive things in their presence, but not directly to them. Have gay, lesbian, bi, and trans friends. Trans is an issue that comes up all the time in the news right now. You can have an adult conversation in front of all the kids in your family about being supportive of trans people and transgender identities and queer people and gay people and lesbian people and bi people. And you will let them know in that moment, when they hear you say positive and supportive things, not directly to them, don't look at the sun during the eclipse, don't look at the queer kid during this conversation, but to other adults in the room. It's particularly important if you're in a family that's anti-queer and there are kids, some of whom are going to be queer when they grow up, if you want to be the ally, the person that they know that they can turn to when they are ready to come out, not to pull them aside, but to argue with the anti-gay, anti-lesbian, anti-bi, anti-trans, anti-pan, anti-everything, bigoted straight people, that have access to them, that they've overheard saying shitty, bigoted things about queers. That's how you let that 13-year-old know that when they're ready to come out, when they need an adult in their corner, that you're the adult that they can turn to. You know how it is these days? These days, you pull out your smartphone, you open your laptop, and you can get anything, practically anything that you want on demand, like our podcast. You listen when you want, when it's convenient for you. Remember when you had to wait for your favorite radio serial drama or soap opera to come on the radio? Probably not. Ask grandma what it was like. It sucked. Those days are done, just like grandma will be soon. So why are you still taking trips to the post office to mail letters and packages when you can get postage on demand, just like you get our show and everything else? And you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk 24/7 when it's convenient for you. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, using your own computer and your own printer. And the mail carrier picks it up. You don't even have to leave the house. Just click print mail. You are done. It couldn't be easier. And right now, you can use Savage for this special offer, which includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Don't you dare wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in S-A-V-A-G-E. That's stamps.com. Click the mic. Enter Savage.
Hi, Dan. Question for you. So I am recently divorced, but I found that whenever I talk to people and, you know, get to know them and I tell them that I'm divorced, especially for people who have been married or are married, their first question and first reaction is to ask me what happened. You know, it's usually they try to say, oh, I hope you don't mind me asking, but, you know, like, what happened? Why'd you get divorced? And I just, like, I don't want to give my business away. So I basically just say, you know, it was a lot of different things and we should have never gotten married to begin with, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like they're looking for one specific reason. I just always get this vibe, especially from married women mostly. You know, they want to know what happened and what went wrong. I feel like to, like, figure out what they can do to avoid the same thing happening to their marriage. So I'm just curious if this is a common thing. Am I alone? I've just been getting this a lot lately and I just wasn't expecting it.
This is definitely a thing. And what people are after when they ask you why you broke up, particularly why you got divorced, is some reassurance that whatever you two did wrong, they're not currently doing wrong in their marriage. When tragedy strikes, and divorce isn't always a tragedy, divorce is sometimes a liberation. Often people part amicably and they go on to have rewarding relationships and they remain friends, and the divorce was a stage in their relationship and not a calamity. But divorce is generally regarded as a bad thing and is often a bad thing. And people, when they hear about a tragedy, when they hear about somebody dying in a car accident, when they hear about somebody, unfortunately, getting sexually assaulted, when they hear about somebody getting divorced, they want all the details. Not because they're particularly concerned with you or for you, but they're concerned about their own relationships and their own marriage and their own sexual safety. When somebody gets infected with HIV, they'll ask how it happened because they want to know what you did wrong so they don't feel at risk themselves. And it's often the case with divorce or contracting HIV or whatever else. People take their chances. They assume a certain degree of risk and shit happens. And this impulse to protect ourselves somehow, to reassure ourselves that our marriage is secure and safe because whatever else is happening in our marriage, whatever our conflicts and stresses are, we didn't do that thing that you did, that thing that led to the end of your marriage, whatever it was. And that's why people want to know what it was so that they can look to their own marriage and not find it in there and then feel safer and more secure. And it is a selfish and often thoughtless response when someone shares with you, when you learn that someone went through a divorce or whatever other tragedy, you have to stifle that impulse to start demanding reassuring details. The details that aren't reassuring for the person you're asking to share, but details you want so that you can then reassure yourself. So when people ask you something like that, if it's a good friend, if it's somebody that you want to confide in for your own reasons, someone you want to confide in because it would be helpful to you to unpack and process this with someone who is empathetic and understanding, open up to that person. When it's someone that you don't want to confide in, someone that you wouldn't personally benefit from examining what went wrong in your marriage with, you can tell that person to fuck the fuck off. It's a crisp, spooky autumn night. You and your date are strolling hand in hand down a quiet street. You're headed to their apartment. You have a feeling that you're going to get laid tonight. Of course, you're going to check and make sure and get their enthusiastic consent and not just go on your feelings. But you also sense that something is amiss. You feel it maybe in your butt area, in your swimsuit region. You go up to their apartment and you duck into the bathroom for a quick spot check. And then you see it, the skid mark in your underwear. And you have to take your underwear off and fold it up and put it in your pocket and hide it and wipe your butt in a panic. What a nightmare. But that nightmare could have been avoided if you had just used Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that hooks up to any standard toilet in minutes, and used it at home before your date, before you pulled on that pair of underwear that is now hidden away. Once you go Tushy, you'll never go back to using scratchy, ineffective toilet paper or toilet-clogging wet wipes. You can walk away from every poop feeling fresh, clean, and confident. No more worrying about skid marks in your underwear or over-wiping and shredding your delicate little hole. Tushy leaves your ass feeling confident and clean, and it's only $69. Your underwear will look good. Your ass will look good. Your ass will taste good. Use the promo code SAVAGE for 10% off your order. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy.
Hey, Dan. I'm calling from the Midwest. I'm in my late 20s. I was out tonight with a friend, and then I started off with her talking about this experience she had with a guy on Friday night. They had a one-night stand, and then Saturday she invited him over and was, she said, explicit about wanting to just hook up and have sex. When he was over at her house on Saturday, she said that they were listening to some music and things were getting touchy and feely. Then he got a text message and then read the text and abruptly left. And so she's asking me and my boyfriend our opinions about what happened. And we were both like, you know, don't overthink it. Who, you know, it wasn't a bad experience as far as the one night stand went. You know, maybe he just decided he didn't want to be a part of this. Maybe he really did get an emergency text. You know, who knows? But then after my boyfriend left and her and I continued drinking into the night, I asked her how old this guy was, if he was maybe more immature than her. And maybe he just couldn't deal with an older woman. I don't know. But she confessed to me that he is a minor. He's 17. And they met because she has volunteers come in, and he was a volunteer at a work event that she was hosting. And she says in the state that we live in that the statute of limitations is 16, but I just don't know how to handle this. I don't know if it's something that I need to place a police report about. I don't know if it's something that I need to, I definitely don't want to go to my boss about this. I don't know. But what I told her was to write everything down. She said that she didn't know how old he was until after the fact. I told her I don't want to know anything else about it, but I do know. So I don't know what I'm supposed to do from here.
Here's what you should do about this. Nothing. If the age of consent where you live is 16, and that's easily verified, just Google age of consent, not statute of limitations, age of consent. If the age of consent where you live is 16, then someone who was of legal age to consent had sex with somebody else of legal age to consent. There was a large age gap here, and that has left you feeling a little bit icked out and left you questioning your friend's judgment. And you're taking that squicked out, icky feeling and asking if you should run to the cops with it and report the crime that didn't happen. The sex that was legal but icky because of the age gap, there's nothing here for you to do. If indeed the age of consent where you live is 16 years old, which is easily confirmed. I'm not generally of the opinion that people in there, however old your friend is, you don't give her age. People who are decades older than 16-year-olds and teenagers should be fucking them, or 17-year-olds should be fucking them. I can understand questioning whether you want to be friends with this woman going forward. Maybe fucking teenagers disqualifies someone from being your friend. And your friend presented herself to you as the victim here, that she got ghosted by this guy, that he disappeared on her and she was hurt. That she wasn't the victim doesn't mean that he was the victim. There could have been a power differential that was exploited here, her age, her experience. But These were two, at least when it comes to sex, consenting adults. And where adulthood kicks in is blurry in our culture. You can drive at 16, you can vote at 18, you can drink at 21. In some states, the age of consent is 16, and some it's 14, and some it's 17, and some it's 18. But if in the state where you live, it is 16, and this boy, this teenage boy was 17, there's no crime here for you to report to the police. You can, if you care to, confront your friend about her judgment and encourage your friend to seek out more age-appropriate sex partners in the future. And if she can't do that, at the very least, ask her not to confide in you about her sex life and its attendant drama, because you don't want to hear it. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. Robinhood strives to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. And Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with confidence. Simple and intuitive, clear design with data presented in an easy-to-digest way. It's really easy to use, and if you're new to investing, this is a great way to get your feet wet. There's no cost and no commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. You can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. They have easy-to-understand charts and market data. You can place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. The Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections, 100 most popular, in sectors like entertainment and social media, and curated categories like female CEOs. And they also have analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You'll learn how to invest as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. And they have custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving my listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. You can sign up and get that free stock at savage.robinhood.com. That's savage.robinhood.com.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 28-year-old woman in St. Louis, Missouri, and I just had kind of a question for you. I feel like I want to explore being a little. As of right now, it feels like I have little moments throughout my day-to-day life, and like I will quickly go from being professional in my day job to talking to my coworkers as if I am a small child. I'm starting to feel that it's kind of becoming a problem and more of an obsession. I've been doing a little more research into little as a lifestyle, and I'm wondering if maybe if I set some time aside to like really explore that side of myself, that I might be able to calm down while I'm at work. I don't understand really what's going on. I know I've been super stressed at work, and I don't know if I'm just kind of missing the carefreeness of being a child again. But, like, I want to be little. And I don't know really anybody else in that lifestyle. Additionally, I don't know if my partner, my boyfriend is interested in being a daddy to me in that kind of way. I know that he does like for me to call him daddy, and that is a part of our dynamic, but we haven't taken it to that point of actually being little and big. But I don't know. Do you happen to have any resources on this, or who can I talk to about exploring that side in a safe way that I'm not just going to immediately like cry and give up?
Joining me by phone to help tackle this question, Lo is an ABDL, that's Adult Baby Diaper Lover podcaster. Her podcast is Dream a Little Podcast. Lo helps littles feel confident about their kinks so they can share it with their significant others. Hey, Lo.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Just for people who've never heard of ABDL or littles, can you unpack those terms? What are we talking about here?
Sure. Adult baby or diaper lover, it's basically just a form of role play where there's usually a power exchange between a caregiver and a little. The caregiver could be a mommy, daddy, and the littles usually play any kind of age there doesn't even have to be a specific age in general, but there is some kind of age regression there.
Now, diapers have come up a lot in my column over the years. You know, adult baby diaper lovers are not a new thing. And I think most of my regular listeners, devoted listeners, will probably have heard me talk about this before because people have called in. And usually it's the person who's partnered with somebody who's into diapers who's having an issue with that, or somebody's into diapers and having a hard time coming out about it or embracing it, or they feel conflicted about it, or they feel shamed for it. And my understanding typically over the years has been that this is about role-playing infancy, like the time of life when you're in a diaper. I have encountered in the last few years people who identify as littles, and what they have meant, or the people that I've interacted with meant by little, was more toddler role-play than infant role-play. Is that not accurate?
It really just depends on who you're talking to. Some people really don't really like being forced. Like maybe they're playing like a teenager role and they like being forced into the little role. But then there are people who do identify mostly as babies. They want to be helpless. They want to be cared for in a very sweet and nurturing way. So it's all over the spectrum. It's really hard to pinpoint like exactly what it is because it's so unique as the people who have these kinks.
And at bottom, as with almost all kinks, there is that element of power exchange. There's that element of helplessness,
yes,
and somebody else being in control. And rather than, you know, you're a helpless slave and this is your mistress and you're following orders, you're a helpless infant or an entirely dependent toddler.
Yes, exactly. And it really is a really very gentle form of BDSM, but it is really, really difficult to tell your partner that you want them to treat you like a baby or, you know, put you in diapers without your partner assuming that this has something to do with pedophilia. The mind just kind of jumps there. And it's really the biggest obstacle that most ABDLs face when they're trying to open up about something that they've kept secret their entire life, really.
Yeah, that is where most people who aren't into this kink, their minds go instantly. Like, what's sexy about a baby? What's sexy about a three-year-old?
Exactly.
And actual babies, actual three-year-olds, nothing is sexy about them. I'm here from parent land to tell everybody about that. Nothing is sexy about diapers and puke. So what is sexy about it besides the helplessness of the power exchange? Or I think you said that really well. It's kind of loving, gentle, kinder, gentler BDSM. But, you know, what's sexy about blank? You know, insert anyone's kinks there. What's sexy about feet? What's sexy about latex swim caps? What's sexy about whatever? A lot of people can't tap into what's sexy about a kink that doesn't turn them on. But with this kink, I think because of that reaction, you know, the concern, people have legitimate concern for the safety of children. People are like demanding answers from people who are into this that they wouldn't demand from somebody who was into feet.
Exactly.
So what's the answer?
First of all, I do want to say, of course, children are never involved or thought of at all. But for me, the sexy side, I find it hard to say. It's sexy is kind of, you know, it depends on who you're talking to. But for me, it's really the dichotomy of seeing someone who is maybe 6 foot tall, muscular guy. And I get to, like, since I'm a switch, so I can play the mommy role. For me, I really get off on forcing them to wear diapers and wear them around me because it's very naughty, like very socially unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's more the element of control and the feeling of being needed. For someone to rely on you and need you for certain things, to just be wanted in that way, like for me, that is the biggest turn on. It's something that you're not supposed to be doing, but you are. And you know, for some people, that's a very strong feeling and a very sexual feeling as well.
Well, just as we said.
But I do need to say, not all of ABDLs are sexual. I just need to say that as well, because for some people, it's completely non-sexual.
That's familiar to me from the pup play scene, that there's a lot of people in, you know, and it's mostly gay guys, younger gay guys who are into the puppy play thing. And some will tell you it's sexual. Some will tell you it makes their dicks hard and they want puppy play incorporated into sex. And some will say it's just a headspace thing where they want to relax and they want to let go of adult responsibilities and concerns and just kind of wallow or roll around in this kind of state where there isn't the frontal lobes torturing you all the time with the minutia of your daily life or your concerns about the destruction of our democracy. And you're saying it's similar for some people into ABDL.
Yes. You know, I interact with a lot of people in the community. And ironically, a lot of these people are men, first of all, in high powered positions at work. They live really stressful lives. They've got a lot of responsibility on their plate. And when they come home, sometimes people need to come home. They need to smoke a bowl. They need to have a glass of wine or whatever they need to do. That's their ritual. And for an ABDL, it could be as simple as putting on a diaper or just sitting at home with a stuffed animal or a pacifier or something like that. It's just a really, like, the headspace I would define as really just a way that you can relax and let go. It's almost like a form of meditation because you're back in this position where you don't have responsibilities and you're able to just really let someone take over for a little bit. And it's very hard for people to do that without the headspace sometimes. So it's kind of a gateway to get to that state of mind, if that makes sense.
It does. Let's talk about the caller's concerns in particular. She's got a boyfriend. He doesn't know about her interest. There are little events. She's looked them up in the community where she lives. She doesn't have the courage right now to show up for one or attend one. But it does seem like her desire to be a little maybe complicating her life. If she, in professional settings, is breaking out into a child's voice and regressing, this isn't transgressing, you know, against social norms in the privacy of your own home with an understanding lover. This is transgressing in a workplace where that could really fuck you up professionally.
Yes. So that quick transition that she's talking about is not what I would consider normal or healthy, because that behavior could potentially make her lose her job. And it could be that maybe she's having those little slips because she doesn't feel like she can express those desires in an open way with her partner, which is very frustrating but understandable. And I do need to make that distinction. Like, most of the people who listen to my podcast are so far into the diaper closet that they can't even find the door. So this is not a normal occurrence. It's not like something that you're usually able to just turn it off or turn it on. So, I mean, I would just say the most important thing that you need to do in order to tell your partner is you need to get comfortable with the idea that your partner might not be interested in this. And you have to be confident enough in yourself to be prepared to face rejection, because that's just part of the game.
Hopefully,
a lot of people, when they open up to their partners.
Just if I can interject really quickly, be prepared to face rejection, but sometimes rejection comes bundled with an accommodation. Sometimes rejection isn't, I can't be with you anymore, pack your things and go. Sometimes rejection when it comes to kink is, I can't do this, this isn't for me. Please find an outlet for this. Please find someone or someones, find a community where you can express this. And I will, and we can allow for that, and our relationship can accommodate that. So I think that's always important to remind kinksters when they're going to come out about their kink, that sometimes rejection can, you know, be across the board and get out, but rejection can also be constructive. How do we find a way that we can have each other and you can have this?
So usually when partners open up, the majority of their partners are going to come back and say, look, I know this is something that you're interested in. It's not for me, but I understand where you're coming from. You know, and that's okay, because you can work with that. People can change their perspective over time. In fact, that's what my boyfriend first reacted when I told him about my kink. He wasn't into it. He didn't think he ever could be, but eventually he warmed up to the idea. But sometimes, like you mentioned before, you can kind of strike a negotiation with your partner where they give you permission to kind of go off and explore, whether that's hiring a professional, or if you're playing with other people online, or if you're playing with other people in person even. And that's kind of the negotiation that my boyfriend and I have at the time, because he is not into wearing diapers or doing any of that. But he's okay with me doing that with other guys, so I can have an outlet for that. So that's always a possibility as well.
You run a class called Confidently Kinky that might benefit this caller. Can you tell us about it?
Yes. So the course I'm creating is completely online, and it walks you through the process of opening up about ABDL to your partner from beginning to end. And not only from my own personal experience, but all the interviews that I've done over the years with hundreds of other ABDLs, I figured out there are certain things that people do in order to have success. So first off, you have to feel confident about your kink. If you're not able to do this, it doesn't matter if you follow all the other steps, you're going to fail. So you've got to feel comfortable with what you want. You've got to figure out exactly what you want and get really in touch with yourself. The second step, you've got to do a little kink investigation, what I call. So you got to investigate and discreetly test your partner's interest in not only other kinks, but also their acceptance of human sexuality in general. You'd like to find someone who's what I call a sexual chameleon, someone who understands human sexuality and understands that it's not always just black and white. And then the third step is communication. You really need to figure out how to tell them why you like this and focus on the feelings you get from the little space rather than the projects themselves. And the final step is the implementation. It's all about implementing age play into your relationship, avoiding common mistakes that most people make, and starting things off on the right foot so you don't scare your partner off.
And people can learn more about Confidently Kinky, your class, at thelittlelounge.com/course. There's just one thing that I would add to that, that I always brace people when they're about to lay their kink cards on the table. Because of sex negativity, because of kink shame, a lot of people who might be open to your kink, who need to think about it, will have an instantaneous negative reaction. You'll say, I'm into X, and they'll go, oh my God, no, ew, ick. And it's actually not them speaking.
Yeah.
It's the culture shoving its hand up their ass and using them as a puppet to say, you know, to tag that sex negative kink shaming line. And then it sinks in, and then they begin to think about what your kink really means and what doing it with you or allowing you to do it with others might really mean, and they come around. But as a kinkster, if you freak out, if you curl up into the fetal position and die when your partner, you know, wrinkles their nose or gives you a look or the first answer is no, you're not going to get anywhere. And so you have to weather that first response, brace for that first response being negative. That doesn't mean their response is always going to be negative. That doesn't mean the response 15 minutes later is going to be negative. But if you get up and leave the room, you're not going to be there in 15 minutes when they've had a minute to think about it and maybe come around and begin to see it from your perspective.
Yes, you hit that on the head. I feel like it's really important to be able to have a sense of humor and to be able to laugh it off and not make it such a huge deal.
Recognizing, of course, that I really do think that this one is a high bar for a lot of people to clear because of the kid squick. Is that fair of me to say?
100%. It really doesn't help that most of the media coverage is on Jerry Springer, My Strange Nose, like that. It really doesn't shed this kink in a positive light.
Lo, her podcast is Dream a Little Podcast. Follow her on Twitter at Daddy I Want This. Lo, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this. I really appreciate it. And I've listened to a couple episodes of your show and I enjoyed it. And I thought it was really smart and insightful.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 33-year-old woman. I've been with a guy for a little over a year now. And about a month ago, I snooped, whoop. Not very hard. I just opened one drawer. And discovered that he spends a lot of time and money going to legal brothels, which has been a habit of his for quite a while and has been throughout our relationship. It's causing me sort of like, well, a lot of pain, and I'm having a hard time knowing how to cope with it for many reasons. While I'm trying to be compassionate, I mean, for one, like we have complicated schedules and it's hard enough for us to see each other. And so it's already kind of feeling neglected, and then to find out that one of the reasons why he doesn't come see me is because he's going on, you know, the sex trip, getting his rocks off. And that feels sort of shitty. And also, like, I was trying to have discussions with him about monogamy and our boundaries, and was giving him a lot of opportunity to tell me about this. And he chose not to. And I mean, in essence, he was just really lying to me about all of this. And so that's really shitty too. And I feel pretty squeamish about the fact that, like, forever, no matter, you know, he's going to age and he can go and, like, have his fantasies enacted by young women who are 10 years under, younger than me. And so it also, like, I guess it makes me feel sort of like hideous. I'm really not hideous, but it makes me feel that way. And I know he sounds like a pretty terrible person given this description, but, you know, I've been trying to find a lot of compassion for him. And like, I think he's just a really complicated person and has a very hard time with intimacy and opening up to people. And this is all kind of new to him. And so, like, I understand why he's chosen a place like that, or what, like the comforts that brothel has given him. But what I am very confused about is, where do my boundaries lie? And I'm trying to understand his perspective, but meanwhile, I like, can I ask him to stop going? I just feel really confused about my boundaries.
You have an absolute right to tell him that dating you means he cannot continue to patronize this particular brothel or prioritize visiting this brothel over spending time with you. You have a right to know that he has other sexual partners, and he has other sexual partners. That puts you at higher risk of contracting a sexually transmitted infection from him. And that would be true whether he's having sex with women who weren't doing sex work professionally. you have a right to know. And he didn't tell you. And you can empathize with him and you can take his side in this argument by saying he has a fear of intimacy and he's not used to this and relationships are new and he doesn't know how to disclose and blah, blah, blah. Or you can stand up for yourself and tell him this stops now if you want to continue to see me. You cannot continue to patronize this brothel and see me. What I want, if this is what you want, is a monogamous relationship. And that is what you allowed me to assume that I had for the last year while you were slipping out and going to a brothel. And not just doing that behind your back, but again, prioritizing that. You both have these complicated schedules. You actually don't get to spend that much time together. And he wasn't making time for you, but he was making time to visit this brothel. He was taking time that he could have spent with you and spending it instead there. Now, there are a lot of guys who go to sex workers because they have an easier time being honest with a sex worker than honest with someone who might reject them. Often, it comes out after a guy gets caught going to see sex workers, straight or gay, that he was going there to do whatever it was that he wanted to do, that he was afraid of disclosing to his partner for fear of rejection. Sex work is not going to reject him. If he wanted to see a dominatrix, if he wanted, he was into feet, if he wanted to be peed on, telling those things to someone that you're dating can be really scary because odds are relatively good that that person is not going to share your kink and might react negatively to it. Or you may have disclosed these things in the past and gotten such a negative reaction from the person that you told that you resolved never to tell anybody ever again except a sex worker. So there may be reasons he's going there, but whatever his reasons are, they don't justify the deceit. They don't justify the risks that he imposed on you without your knowledge or consent. And you've got to stop taking his side in this argument. You've got to stop empathizing with this person who was doing something dishonest, deceitful, dangerous potentially to you. So get mad. That doesn't mean you have to end the relationship. That doesn't mean that you can't forgive him and move on from here. That doesn't mean that you aren't right about the reasons he might have been doing this. But at the very least, you have to go in there angry and demand some answers and some honesty and change if you're going to stay together. And maybe staying together means there will be some accommodation. Maybe this is an important part of his sexual expression. Maybe there is something that he indulges with sex workers that you're not interested in indulging him in, and you don't want him to be denied for the rest of his life, so there might be an accommodation where once a year or twice a year he could visit this particular brothel and do those particular things, whatever they might be. But all of this has to be on the up and up. He has to be honest with you, and he has to have your informed consent going forward about whatever risks he's assuming and then assuming for you too with his extracurricular sexual activities. So caller, step one, get mad. Step two, get mad at him, yell at him, peel the bark off him. And step three, assess whether you can continue to date this person. And that depends on whether he can, from this point on, be honest with you.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to a woman on last episode who wasn't sure why a guy she was talking to online mentioned that he saw her on a date with another woman. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. He saw her at a concert, and for me, music is really important, and I would love to know if someone had attended the same concert as me. So I would, if I was chatting with someone, I would probably bring it up. And he might come from a polyamorous or non-monogamous background as a polyamorous woman. To me, mentioning that you were on a date with another person just wouldn't be a big deal. It actually might be kind of funny, and I'd want to know the details of the date or what it was like and talk about my own dating experiences. Occam's razor, the guy's probably just inconsiderate or maybe even trying to make her jealous, but he could potentially be from a non-monogamous background.
Hi, 22-year-old Sugar Baby here. I'm calling in response to the episode about sugar babies and sugar daddies. What that spokesperson had to say from Seeking.com is absolute bullshit. She's just saying that because of SESTA and all this other shit. She just doesn't want to admit that Seeking.com is for sex workers. I'm a sugar baby, but I also identify as a sex worker. There are a lot of clients that I might not have sex with, but I'm still a sex worker. we work in the sex industry, a lot of clients will punish you for not having sex with them. Like, most of these guys are looking for a cheap sex worker. And advice that I would give to anyone going onto this website is don't sleep with someone if they just want to pay you a low sum to have sex with them. If this guy was really rich, he would get a high cost escort. A lot of being a sugar baby is a fantasy, just like escorting. You have to provide a fantasy for these men in order to make them feel powerful and good about themselves. You can provide emotional support. She also made a comment about how there's no breaking up and no one gets their heart broken. That's completely not true. A lot of relationships do come out of this, but it might not be a traditional escort client relationship, but it's still sex work. And a lot of times you do have to break up and make up. And there's a lot expected from a sugar baby other than just like being beautiful company for a rich man. So basically complete bullshit, made me really mad.
Hi, for the young man in episode 623 who is heteroflexible or bisexual and wondering if there are any women out there who are into that. Yes. Yes, there are. There are lots of us. There are lots of us. And I would give Dan my number to give to you in a heartbeat if I thought he would do it. Get out there. Find us.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. Get your Impeach the Motherfucker Already gear at itmfa.org. And the 14th Annual Hump Film Festival premieres in Seattle, San Francisco, Portland, and Olympia next month. Go to humpfilmfest.com to order your tickets now. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Lo on Twitter at DaddyIWantThis. And again, go to dscc.org, click on Contribute, and throw some money the Senate's way. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. I'll be back at you next week with another installment of Savage Lovecast. Thanks for joining.